whole fours.
They all looked at the grease tubes, still gleaming behind their locked doors after nearly 100 useless years.
What'd they do?
JB closed his eyes and recited from memory. Even though Ryan knew how encyclopedic the little man's knowledge of weapons was, he was still impressed.
TOW-4 stands for Tube-Launched Optically Tracked Wire-Guided Missile. Originally replaced the 106mm recoilless rifle. Has 6 wings that come out in flight. Uses a Hercules motor. Range around 3 miles. Flight velocity of 675 miles per hour. Carries a 15-pound explosive warhead.
How do you aim it?
Optical sensors in the nose. Controls go down twin wires. Helium pressure actuators. Night sight and laser scope. Penetrate any armor anyone had ever seen in those days. Beautiful. Real beautiful. Who'd have thought I'd ever see one?
Can we get out of this death shop, Ryan? I find this all saddens and sickens me.
They're okay if you use them right, Doc.
There is no right, John Dix. Can you not see this? With the dealing of death, there can only be wrong. Wrong!
Well, that could be. But I know that if I'm against a chiller with a stick, then I'd welcome a bigger stick. Come on, let's move.
The cut on Jack's arm was hurting him, and they stopped off when they passed what had been a doctor's office on the way to the entrance. JB cleaned and rebandaged the wound, which seemed to be healing fairly well. The surgeon was still in his office. From the sprawled position of the leathery corpse, he must have been leaning back in his swivel chair when he put the muzzle of the Smith & Wesson between his teeth. The impact had blown him over, legs resting on the overturned seat. Laurie stared down into the splintered exit hole in the top of the skull with a morbid fascination. The grim Shea Canyon Redoubt, with its flavor of ancient death, was deeply depressing for the 6 friends. Their backpacks already held all the self-heats they needed, as well as some emergency water supplies. JB found some AquaPure tabs and handed them out. Everyone had sufficient ammo for their blasters. There was nothing to stay for. As they neared the main entrance doors to the redoubt, they could see a tattered poster tacked to the wall. It showed a hillside covered with fighting men, most on horseback, many with hats made from feathers. They were attacking a smaller group of people who looked like sec men in dark blue uniforms. They were in a defensive ring, battling against overwhelming odds, and at their center was a tall man with flowing yellow hair.
7th Cavalry, fighting against the Sioux. Battle of the Little Bighorn. The Indians massacred the whites and served them right.
The caption on the poster said simply, "Custer died for our sins." Underneath, in spray can crimson, faded to a pale pink, someone had added a line, "Whose sins are we dying for?" Ryan punched the open code into the control panel at the side of the massive armored sectors, and after a fractional delay, they began to slide back. It had felt warm before. Now they were all struck by a smothering wave of bright heat and dazzling sunlight. The twisted waste of red and orange desert stretched limitlessly before them. The hot desert air was heavy with the scent of sagebrush, mesquite, and creosote. The sky seemed higher, the horizons farther in that place of shimmering heat. There were vicious streaks of chem clouds, 30 miles or more off to the east, vivid purple against the glowing pink sky. The doors of the redoubt opened onto a plateau, with the remains of a narrow blacktop winding toward the valley beneath. Remote control vid cameras ranged the area, protruding from the jagged rocky overhang like the stops on a mission hall harmonium. The complex was so well hidden by the mountain soaring above it that Ryan guessed it would be virtually impossible to detect from the flatter desert below. They ventured forth. Once outside, the pointer on the rad counter flickered on the line between scarlet and pale orange. It was obvious that the region had once been a ferocious hotspot, which might, Ryan guessed, account for the fact that nobody seemed to have tried to break into Shea Canyon Redoubt.
New Mexico, or Arizona, near as I can make it. Close to Utah and Colorado as well. Sexton isn't that good, and the maps are kind of old.
Apart from rough local sketch plans, Ryan knew that no proper maps covering any appreciable area had been drawn since the United States of America ceased and became the Deathlands.
Was this always desert like this, Doc?
No. The way I recall it, far north as this was more a kind of dry grasslands, near to the prairies. It seems as though the new kings and the long winters must have tipped the ecological and meteorological balance of the land's structure. It got hotter and drier, so the grass died off and the sands came north from Mexico. If we're near to Canyon de Chelly, as it seems, that was always desert land, but you could cultivate it.
With what?
I recall the Navajo had peach orchards until brave Kit Carson came riding in and grubbed them all up.
Which way we go? Seems like lots of nothing every which way.
Ryan scanned the horizon. The terrain looked like he'd once imagined the hot spots of Deathlands must have looked shortly after the dust and smoke cleared. A land that was twisted and tortured, rocks scraping skyward at every angle. Red dominated, and orange shaded down through pink into gray. It was difficult to judge distances properly in the clear air, but it looked like the jagged mountains to the north could be a good 50 miles off. Jack's question was a fair one. Which way should they go? Which way could they go? They all looked much the same.
Anyone for going back inside and trying another jump tomorrow? Anyone got any idea of any special direction for us to go? Well, how about west, along the valley toward those low hills? You all agree? Well, nobody disagrees, so we'll go down and west. JB, you like to lead off for a change? I'll cover the rear.
By the time they climbed down to the rim of the escarpment, it was late afternoon. There was no sign of any ville as far as the eye could see. Apart from some unidentifiable birds circling above a clump of stunted trees 10 miles to the north, there was no life to be seen. The shifting sand around their feet showed all manner of tracks, the swirling trail of sidewinders weaving their way, the skittering marks of rodents, and once, the huge pad marks of a big cat. Jack paced the distance between the paws, whistling at his calculations that the puma could be more than 12 feet long. As they neared the bottom of the old blacktop, Christy hesitated, peering toward the west. The others all stopped, waiting to hear what she'd been able to see.
A column of dust. Could be whipped up by the wind. We called them dust devils back home in Harmony. But then again...
It might be wags, men, horses. Could be anything.
Could be. It's far off, lover, moving over behind a low mesa. Now it's gone.
The last 200 yards of the blacktop had totally vanished, disappearing as though it had never been. There had been a landslide and what looked like a series of flash floods, washing away at the land over the decades, changing the topography, hiding the road. There was a trail at the bottom of the valley, but from it there was no trace of the redoubt. Just a blank side of a mountain, scraped red raw by the harsh weather.
No wonder nobody's gotten up there. Just hope we can find the place when we leave.
Rock there shapes like the head of an old man with a big hat.
Lori indicated a spot just off the trail, near a dry riverbed. They all saw the frost-driven boulder that she'd pointed at.
Damned if it doesn't look somewhat like me, my dainty little cherub of passion and devotion.
No, I said like old man, Doc, not like you.
A lot of horse tracks.
Shod or unshod?
JB knelt at a fork in the trail to get a better look.
Both. What kind of animals do your Indian friends ride, Doc?
By the three Kennedys, John Dix. We are talking about events that took place approximately 200 years ago. Then the warriors of the tribes rode ponies, unshod. Around here were many different small tribes. Chiricahua and Mescalero Apaches, as well as the Hopi and Navajo. But if any have survived the long winters, then who knows?
Do you think any could have made it?
Guess so. They lived in mountain and valley fastnesses, often far away from any places of white men, away from what might have been important strategic targets in the Holocaust of 2001. So, yes, they could have lived.
Well, someone around here's been riding horses, and there's narrow wheel tracks as well.
Wags?
Not wags. Wheels too thin.
Look more like prairie schooner tracks to me. Though these tired old eyes aren't as sharp as they used to be.
What are prairie schoony?
Wooden wags, with big high wheels to get through the rivers and the soft sand. They had canvas tops, left their ruts clear across the country from east to west. Moved the frontiers, they did.
I don't like the way the trail shows signs of such heavy use. The country's so bare that we'll stand out like a legless mutie at a gaudy house dance. Maybe we should find a camp for the night.
Could do with water. Place like this isn't likely to have much. Head for those trees. It's the only spot of green for miles.
In such an arid waste, the sun baking down from dawn to dusk, a man would lose around a pint of precious bodily liquid every hour. And the sun would cook out the sweat, so he didn't even realize the way he was dehydrating. At least not until he found himself on his hands and knees, wondering why the earth kept moving away from him. Mariposa lilies dotted the floor of the valley, interspersed with spiky clusters of yucca. A large gopher snake writhed in front of Jack Lauren, making the boy reach for his magnum.
Not wise, Jack. Noise like that'll carry for miles.
Oh, sure.
It hadn't looked that far to reach the grove of small cottonwoods, yet they walked steadily for more than 3 hours before they came close enough to distinguish individual trees, to see the glittering silver bark and the large lacquered leaves shifting in the light-hot breeze.
Indians used to make drums out of the trunks of the cottonwood.
There might be water. I can sort of taste it. Maybe deep down. Dunno.
The sun was slithering down behind the tops of the mountains to the far west, casting elongated shadows across the jagged landscape. The chem clouds that had threatened a storm had disappeared, and the sky was clear from edge to edge. Doc looked close to exhaustion, leaning heavily on Laurie. But as they reached the head of a draw that wound in toward the trees, he straightened up.
Bringing in the sheaves.
Ryan turned and half-smiled at Christy. The six companions had been through some bitter times, times of infinite peril. They'd survived them, and they were still together. Christy returned his smile.
Doc?
What is it, my lad?
Way back y'all days. Old days? Was there a god in old days?
You aren't joshing me, are you?
What does joshing mean?
Never mind. Was there God in my olden days? I'll tell you that if there was, he kept himself well hidden, Jack.
J.B. collected some wood for a fire from a tangled deadfall across the draw, 100 yards or so below the cottonwoods. It was all bone dry and burned with a clear gold light and little smoke. Ryan had the uneasy prickling feel at the nape of his neck that someone had been watching them ever since they left the hidden redoubt. Someone or something. Shaking his head, he lay back on a bed of soft sand and stared into the flames of the crackling fire as night fell.
No chance of any fresh food around here, is there?
Guess not, lover. When we get into the hills, there'll probably be deer. Higher, and there'll be bear and goat. Too dry for any fishing. Maybe I can catch you a snake or two, if that's your fancy.
No thanks.
There had been no water. Laurie had taken a jagged length off a branch and started to dig near the center of the grove of trees. She got down to around 3.5 feet, reaching earth that was less dry, but it wasn't damp enough to try to siphon any water from its bottom.
Hear that?
I heard it.
Coyote. Heard them around Harmony.
Oh man, sounding like coyote.
That's no man.
They all reached for their blasters, but the sound wasn't repeated. Around 11 o'clock, the light was full gone. A sliver of moon had appeared briefly, then vanished behind a bank of low cloud. The fire had burned low, all of the wood finished. Jack stood up and stretched.
I go get more branches.
Yeah, we'll keep a watch. Don't want that cougar creeping up on us when it's dark. Want me to come with you?
No, Ryan. Be fine. Get from Deadfall. Lots there, huh, JB?
Yeah. Watch the ground. It's rough. A lot of scrub and dry stuff. Take care. You could turn your ankle on it pretty easy.
Uh-huh. Sure.
A wave of the hand, and he was gone. Ghosted away among the silent trunks of the cottonwoods. Ryan watched him, seeing the silver sheen of the albino's hair, floating like a beacon in the darkness. He felt the touch of Christie's hand on his arm.
Go after him, lover.
Why?
Because... just go.
Ryan knew better than to waste time pressing her for a reply. The mutated blood in Christie's veins had given her strange skills and talents, and if she felt unease, then there must be some reason for it. He uncoiled from the sand and padded silently after Jack. The scent of the mesquite was even stronger, and Ryan paused, kneeling and rubbing his hands through the dust, which still carried the heat of the day, and dried his skin. He stood and adjusted the Sig Sauer blaster in its holster. He followed the boy, out from the cottonwoods, down the dry creek bed, toward the deadfall of jumbled branches. He heard Jack a little ahead of him, picking his way over a scattering of dead brush. Ryan was just about to call out a warning that he was approaching the lad, knowing that Jack's razor-honed reflexes might lead to his attacking him before knowing it was a friend, when he heard an ominous sound.
Jack?